Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett.
And Fred Schenkelberg.
And welcome to an edition of Speaking of Reliability. How's it going, Fred?
Oh, good. Hey, before we go too far, there's something going on in the background there. You got a jet hovering over your building or something?
Actually, of course, it's a Porsche motor. It's a V8 Porsche 928 that's right outside my office window. So my office is in this office building downtown, and I'm on the first floor, and there's this really sweet Porsche 920. It's this vintage. Like, it looks like it's probably about 1978. That's parked outside a lot, and somebody's warming it up right now. So it's a nice rumble, but yes, I'm sure everybody can hear it.
Yeah, okay. Oh, I guess we'll just leave that in there then. And at some point, I'm sure it's going to rev its engines and interrupt us, but we'll
music to a lot of people's ears, and I'm sure a lot of people in our audience are car people. So, and I think it's funny, it happens to me, right? Like, I'm the one who always turns conversations to cars. So even which I create audio noise in our conversations talking about cars, and now there's literal automotive noise in the background.
That's right. And it sounds pretty nice. It's humming along pretty nicely. Yeah. So it could, it works.
It works. Okay.
All right. So before we dive into cars, and I know you love talking about cars and blowing things up and creating weird things and fixing stuff and everything else. Last week I was with a client. And they were struggling to figure out what to do to fix some problems with their product. And it's not uncommon, right? We make complex products and have things don't work as expected, or customers use it in a strange way, and then we don't know how to deal with it, right? We have to sort that out. So what are you doing to understand the problem? And he says, well, first off, we thought it was this component, so we sent it to the vendor, and they said, there's nothing wrong with it. It's our fault. And so then we looked at it under a microscope, and we really couldn't see anything. And now we're running a bunch of tests. We're taking the whole product and running it and trying to understand how that failure happens. Well, what stresses are you applying? Well, a whole bunch of them, because we don't know what makes the problem happen. Okay. So without getting into details, which would be proprietary, it was, well, you're being limited by your root cause analysis here. And I think artificially. How long have you been working on this problem? Oh, we've had 3 or 4 engineers working on it on and off for like 9 months. Okay.
Right.
Have you shipped any of this to a chemical lab or a lab that can actually take this apart and do a scanning electron microscope or material analysis or whatever? Oh, no, that's too expensive. Yep. Right. Well, oh, there goes that engine. It's queued right there.
Perfect.
But, right, you've run into this, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's so much to be said for taking some time and really designing an experiment, not literally doing a design of experiments every time, but, I mean, really, what are the relationships you're looking to identify? I think that should be written out on paper. These are the relationships between stress and failure or stress and response. Mm-hmm. And I know before, and we got to mention, we brought up this topic to talk about, and I said, wow, it's really timely. I just came back from Chicago, where for a week I was in an amazingly impressive lab. And they have, and I can speak about these because this wasn't what I was working on, and it's stuff that they've cleared to, use the promotional stuff. But they have a room that they put a fire truck in to just to measure the electro emissions going out, to profile electrical emissions in 3D, scanning going out of it and going into it. So they can create an exact data profile, visually, like a CAD model, mm-hmm, of all the electrical emissions going out,
And strengths and weight and frequencies,
yeah, exactly,
and everything else. Wow.
Amazing. Full contours and everything. And the room was awesome. It's these huge, the walls are these huge material spikes. It looks like a spiky, wall.
Like an anechoic chamber kind of thing?
Yeah. Like 5-foot spikes and then all kinds of crazy antenna stuff and deflectors and all that.
Oh, wow.
It was really neat, yeah. And Then there was another room that was entirely dedicated to an EMP, like in the Bank Heist movies, electromagnetic pulse to kill electronics.
Right.
So, you know, in the Bank Heist movies, they always pull up with a van next to the building and hit the EMP button and it shuts down everything in the building. Well, that's what this room actually was. It was really neat. It had like this huge, looked like a copper spider that was like the size of like maybe a van or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you put electronics in the room and blast it to different degrees to, you know, make it fail. And,
oh man. So, I mean, going back to the profile of the, you know, all the emissions are in and around that truck, I imagine that's for the communications. They have probably multiple frequencies and systems they can communicate. But it's interference and strength and all those other things you can get off of that. So if you're having problem with one radio, for example, it may be that interference that's causing a problem. Short of just random guessing, that lab actually gives you the data you need to sort that out and design the right antennas.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Instead of trying to just, you know, maybe historically with some radio stuff, you know, you make modifications, try and make modifications. You know, there's a little bit half art, half science. Mm-hmm. And this is no, after this testing day, you can go to the engineers and go to their computer and bring up a full 3D contour model, the way you would rotate around a 3D model, the fire trucks in the model. And around it is a full contour of a color of the shape, the exact shapes and positions of all these different, you know, radio frequencies and waves
fields,
and
yeah.
Electromagnetic. And there's no more guesswork. You just now can design, you know, shields and antennas and direct. They can also direct the way things transmit and, you know, almost like something that was physical in a CAD model now. Mm-hmm, so It's, you know, just take, I mean, so was that, I'm sure that testing is very expensive to do something that big, but is it worth it? Right.
Yeah.
Like how much engineering time did you save? Like you said, three engineers is working for weeks and weeks versus you could have one engineer you give this data set to and he's like, oh, okay, this is what I'll make.
Yeah.
You know?
It's solved. And it's been frustrating to me is that, you know, yes, failure analysis is difficult, but a Pareto of just the count of the types of failures you're seeing doesn't help you solve the answer. Right. It says, here's what problem I should go work on. And let's sort out whether this issue has got a single cause or has it got multiple causes and what are they and what can we do about it? But you need to do that root cause analysis at some level. And there's whole processes and procedures for that. But I find the sticking point for most organizations is the resources, the lab equipment. I miss when I was at HP. It was one of the things I miss the most is that somebody would send me a failed circuit board, for example, or they'd call me and talk about they had this white powder on a board, for example, and they're not sure what it is. And we'd FedEx it to our chemical lab, our failure analysis lab. And the next day, almost every time, it would be like one day turnaround, Ralph would come back with these photos and chemical analysis and detailed stuff saying, well, here's what I saw. Here's how much energy it caused to create that burn mark. Or here's the chemical breakdown of this material. Here's the intermetallic that's in this mechanical joint that shows embrittlement. And here's where that could come from. He had it beautiful photographs and beautiful cross sections and images and details that gave you the evidence you needed to go solve a problem. Whereas saying, oh, I got white powder on the board. I'm like, okay, unless I know what that is, there's not a whole lot I can do about it.
Yeah, I think it's simply, it's just me. I mean, there's no, as you said, you even though that lab was owned by HP, you still sent it off to them. I mean, there's no reason that lab has to be part of your company. I mean, there's an infinite amount of resource of every type of lab you can imagine.
Right.
That you can engage, you know, for just a single engagement. So it always shocks me the hesitation people have to do that, right? You have this ability to get that kind of data, resolution of data, as you just described, with really a very reasonable investment and not a big like long-term capital investment. It's a single, you know, transaction investment. So yeah. I am always surprised by that.
Yeah, it's an expense that you pay today. You might spend $10,000. To do a detailed analysis on a complex problem, send them good parts and bad parts and some analysis and back and forth. And yeah, it might cost you $10,000 to get some details back. And if you're doing that week in and week out, yeah, go buy your own equipment, staff up a lab. Yet you can do a blanket purchase order with a good failure analysis lab, build a relationship with them, and you can get some amazing details quickly. And the hard part is that to me, and this goes back to one of your favorite topics, Adam, is the people, right? As the engineers on staff, we know that they've got to work on solving these problems, and they're being paid and salaried already to do those things. And I've seen it in so many organizations where a quarter of the engineering talent is typically working on past problems, solving field problems in one form or another. And so it's kind of baked into the overall headcount and system. But we need 10K to go to a lab and get this detailed analysis done. Well, that comes out of a different budget, and it's not budgeted already. It's not already accounted for. But spending that doesn't make, it's not realized. Well, I am sure these are smart people. They realize that if their engineers have the solution, they don't have to spend a bunch of time on it. But is that like an unrealized gain or something? I'm not sure what the right term is there.
I think just the inefficiencies and losses of large communication networks, right? So the matter of having somebody, a lot of people who feel the pain don't have the audience to talk about it mm-hmm. at a level for the where the solutions are, right? So it's difficult to run like that, things like that up the chain, right? That are paying attendance. Yeah, it's tricky. It takes some of the leadership realizing that all these small things that are going on are really accumulating to being quite a burden. Well, yeah, maybe that one little individual issue isn't, but for the fact that you have 10 of those a year of different types, mm-hmm. that is a pretty big burden. But they're only noticed in their small little bites, right? And so that's why they aren't competitive enough to run up the chain of command for attention. But so it takes somebody being aware at the top to know that that happens.
Yeah, well, that's where you come in. You sort that out for
us. That's right. That's what I want to try and change.
Yeah, you know, and some of the engineers I work with over the last couple of years are just brilliant at, you know, help with limited resources for failure analysis, sorting out what they can and what they finding solutions and so on. And yet, I always kind of shake my head and go, well, why didn't you just send that to, you know, Evan's analytical group, and they could have done this, and this analysis on it. You would have had it done in 2 days. And I'm like, no, I didn't know about that. What do they do? What's their address? I'm like, you got to look outside the office here, guys. You got to get out of your own lab. There are tons of resources out there that can make life. Remember back in school when you had this great lab?
You know? Right. So maybe that's the action we're putting out to our listeners. So I never like to just harp on the, hey, leadership should do better. I always want to try to give immediately actionable things that the brand engineer can do. Mm-hmm. And so maybe in this conversation, what that is that brand new engineer is to stop and do, like we just said, remember when there was a lab and a resource? Why, hey, we need more information. Really put together an exact proposal, find the right lab, contact it, get a quote, and bring that. Right, that's something that your manager will take time to escalate because it's so much easier to do and very specific. It doesn't have a bunch of actions tied to it of should we investigate this? How much, you know, should we find out how much it costs? So maybe, you know, take the initiative there, and that's what you can do as an individual contributor. And then that will also drive culture change, because then next time people will be like, hey, wait a minute, what about, you know, they see value in it.
That's right. And that's the other half of the equation, is that once you get that answer back, the comparison is, well, we would have either stumbled into the answer eventually or just continue to have this problem for months and months and months. And there's a cost associated with that, plus the engineering time to deal with it. And on the other hand, we sent it to the lab and a week later we had a viable solution being put in place. And yeah. It's the hard part, I think, is that these are all, I'm solving something and the cash doesn't just go straight into the bank. It engineers stay employed. We're still working on things. We're working on what we should be working on, not on fixing things. And the profit margin doesn't change in a product necessarily. I mean, there are exceptions when you fix a field problem and it goes away and the warranty improves, kind of thing. But that time to getting good information, that's hard to quantify. And I think people at all levels of the organization understand the concept, but actually putting a dollar value to compare to the cost of going to the lab is difficult to do.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It takes some definitely the ability to have long-term vision.
And that's back to that cultural thing. It's like, what you want me to, you can solve this. So spend another 2 weeks fussing around on your lab bench in the back room with really poor equipment. I have faith in you. You're a smart engineer. You go solve it versus what you want me to write a check for $10K today.
Like,
you know,
another thing to do to help bring awareness to the value of that is benchmarking with competitors. I mean, you can, you can benchmark both in process and in product. You know, I recently had a product that I developed a testing program for, and we took their number one competitor and put it through the exact set, like literally right next to it on the test table for all the steps. And, you know, and it was interesting, but I was able to give them feedback before we started the test. I opened up their product and the competitors, and I was like, your competitor's clearly done this type of robustness testing, this, this, and this, because I see these hallmarks of results of that, you know, and they were like, whoa, okay. Like, you could see that they realized, like, they were behind.
Yep.
That they hadn't done this, and this their competitor already had done some of these things.
And it's
built that was before we even started the test. That was just opening it up and having somebody experienced on what common outcomes are for these types of tests.
Right.
Take a look at it. So that pretty quickly made it evident that this is a good investment just to catch up. Forget getting ahead.
That's right. Now, it's, you know, it's one thing, and we've talked about what do you collect from the field and field data and all this kinds of stuff, and but that's usually not enough to, it gives you a direction of where to go, but you still need to do that root cause analysis. I love root cause analysis. It gets into the details.
What you're describing is the difference between an archaeological dig and a dissection, right? If you want to know, I guess maybe that's grotesque, but you know, there's a big difference between digging around for dinosaur bones and having a dead dinosaur in your lab to dissect, right? Like, you're going to get very different results. You know, that's a dinosaur that died of natural causes, of course, but you kind of get what I'm saying. You know, field data is like out there searching and sifting through the sand for information. Who knows what you're going to find? It's harder to find. The information's incomplete. As opposed to a very intentional initiative with the with it, and that's why it's so valuable and a big cost savings. But yeah, it's a little harder because the cost is all up front.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to say that all root cause analysis deals with chemical analysis and cross sections and, you know, all those kinds of cool assets that we have in labs to take things apart and peer inside and look at it really closely and all that stuff. And there's, like the lab you visited, there's some really cool tools out there. If you just, did you know that there's a lab in Texas that tests for susceptibility to fire ant damage?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I got to find an address for that guy.
That's super cool.
Make sure I never sit in that, head to that town.
Yeah, right.
But part of the failure analysis is also the process. So many organizations report a large number of products returned to them have no trouble found. And it's common, right? It's just a, usually, if not the number one Pareto item, it's like second or third. It's usually a very high number. You get it back and you can't verify that there's anything wrong with it. It looks great. It works great. Yet the customer took the time to call you up and return the product. And so part of the process, and I ran into this one time as a quick story, is that somebody in the company called me up and said, hey, you got to check out this return. It's like there's something not quite right here. And I go down and it was our bulk shipment of the product on a pallet, shrink wrapped by us. And they shipped back the entire pallet. And I said, And they're claiming this is a warranty claim, you know, claim that these don't work. Right? They can't figure out how to get the shrink wrap off of it.
Right.
You know, no. And so I dug into it some more. And it turns out that if a company ordered, you know, bulk orders of our product, if they returned individual units that customers brought back to them under warranty, they got like 80% of the price that they paid back. They get a piece of it back. It was a small bit taken for restocking and, you know, for what, I don't know what the point was, but if they misordered, it cost them to return the product to us. If they just claimed it was a warranty return, they got full value back. That's what it was.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, let's work through this a little more. And we turned out it was a high volume product, and it turned out to be about $250,000 a month was returned that were pretty clearly stocking issues and ordering issues. And it spiked at the end of the quarter every year, every quarter.
Right.
Like, all right. So this isn't really a reliability problem, but it's really right. mucking up my data, what's failing right. in the field. So let's fix yep. this.
Yeah. Yeah. It is amazing. Data scrubbing can be shocking. Try to get the information as good data.
Wow, we should make a little scrubber brush and call it Data Scrubber.
Data Scrubber. I think we make a cartoon character. We should draw a character. Scrubby the Scrubber.
Yeah.
Scrubby the Data Scrubber. It'd be like right. Clippy from Microsoft that everybody hated. No, we don't want to go.
Yeah, we don't want to do that. All right. Well, anyway, we get tons of information back from all kinds of bits of our organization about what's coming back from the field. But until we dive into the details and do the root cause analysis, yes, it means going to a lab. And yes, it may mean paying some money for it. It's so advantageous to you getting good information of what to do, how to solve problems. I don't know. Adam, is that a good summary for this one?
I think so. Okay. I think so. There's a lot to be said for investment up front to get clean data if you really account for all the costs associated with poor data, lack of information, and the effort of scrubbing. And yeah, it's usually a pretty clean cut.
That's right. Decision. So if you're listening to this and you like the idea of a little cartoon character or a product or maybe even an app for your phone for Scrubby the Data Scrubber, let us know. Send, you know, what would Click and Clack do? Say, you know, sign, send us a V8 engine from a Porsche 928.
And we'll fix it and return it to you.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, they had all kinds of creative ways for people to send donations to them, that kind of thing. But anyway, yeah, let us know what you think. What kind of barriers do you see to getting the failure analysis that you really need and to deal with? And or if any of you have ideas or suggestions on how to solve that, or if you've had some success stories there, we'd love to hear that too. So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And please join the conversation. So with that, Adam, I think we'll wrap it up.
It's perfect timing. The car just pulled back in the spot. Can you hear it?
Oh, it did. Yeah. It's amazing.
It came to say goodbye.
All right. Lunch is over, right. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Later then.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.